Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Happy to have you along today as we take a look at staying injury-free in fall and winter and dealing with all those aches and pains that can develop. Bill Boisenault, Associate Professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health and Senior Physical Therapist at the Spine Center Physical Therapy Clinic at UW Hospitals and Clinics. One of our guests today, he's with us by phone. Hey, Bill.
Hi, Larry. Good morning. And Lori, good morning, too.
Good morning, Bill.
Thank you very much for being with us. Lori Time Brody, physical therapist and athletic trainer with UW Sports Medicine and Spine Center, our other guest. And Lori, great to have you.
Excellent to be here. And I'm so happy that we're 3/4 of the way through November and the weather's still been so fantastic. People are still out running in shorts. Saw them on my way here.
I was in northern Wisconsin, Bayfield County, on Saturday. There was 14 inches of snow.
A lot of lake effect where I was. Yeah, yeah.
And well, it was, I'm telling you, it was miserable walking.
Yeah, we're talking to a pretty diverse crowd then, I'm guessing, across the state.
We
got 14 inches of snow, and then down here we got people running in shorts.
Yep, that's pretty typical for Wisconsin, isn't
it? Yeah, exactly, exactly. So, you know, I'm glad to see people are still staying in that exercise routine as we head into winter, head into the holidays. It's so easy to say, oh, I have so much to do and I'm not going to go do my exercise. And it's really important to get in a good habit, to get in the routine. I know it's a hard time to start getting in that routine, but it still makes sense to do that. Because once you're in the middle of December, then the January blues hit, it's hard to get going. So this is a time to take charge and take care of yourself and get going on some exercise.
Yeah, well, I agree. You know, it doesn't seem fair how easy it is to fall out of a routine and how much harder it is to get back into it and stay into it. And the holidays are a tough time for that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Judith in Mequon has a question for you, too, so let's go there. Hi, Judith.
Hi. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a question about trigger points in muscles, not tender points like you would have in fibromyalgia. I have been diagnosed that they are trigger points. They're very palpable to the touch. They're located particularly in my thighs and in my butt, and they are much more noticeable after I had knee replacement surgery in 2006. One of the hardest parts beside the pain is the fact that if I do any kind of exercise, and I love to exercise, ride my bike, walk, whatever. But the knots get tighter and tighter. It's like a catch-22. The more I exercise, the tighter and more painful the knots get. I did try deep tissue massage with a certified massage therapist, and I had that weekly for several months. And that would provide very temporary relief, but it never got rid of the actual muscle knots. So recently I was reading about a couple of things, and I wondered, I would like your opinion, would this help? One is dry needling, and the other would be acupuncture.
All right, Bill, let's turn to you.
Yeah, trigger points are, they are more than a nuisance. They are areas in muscle. They are knots. You can feel them. You can feel the knots. And many trigger points, when you put pressure on them or they get irritated, not only do they cause local pain, but they cause pain referral, whether it's down into the leg, down into the feet. It can be very debilitating. Deep soft tissue massage usually is the initial route to go. I think in order for that to have a good chance to work, it needs to be combined with stretching after the deep soft tissue massage. And once the knots start working out, then you work on some core stabilization. Dry needling is another intervention of a treatment. It's a counter irritant that can allow the muscle to relax that knot, to let go a bit. But again, the key is to follow that or acupuncture with stretching of that muscle group. That seems to be the best combination to keep these just from coming back again. So that has been my experience. It's either a combination of deep soft tissue massage with stretching, or dry needling with stretching. So there is some evidence in the dry needling and acupuncture is being used more and more for these.
Okay.
Wonderful, because it feels like I'm really stuck, and I would love to be able to get back.
Get unstuck.
these trigger points can go away. That's what I need to hear.
Yeah.
And one question, though, I would have is that, and of course it depends so much on your particular insurance, but I do know the way that things are written out by, say, a physical therapist can make a difference in whether or not your insurance will cover it. Do you have any kind of tips for me so that I might have a possibility of dry needling or acupuncture being covered by insurance?
Boy, I'd have to say that it's... You have to look back at your insurance company and see what they require and see what the language is in from your insurance company. And you may start by asking someone at your insurance company by calling them up and saying, this is what I'm going for. Is it covered? You know, what would be the broad category that it's covered under?
Yeah. I know for the dry needling, typically that is billed under a manual therapy code. That's where it's bundled. It would be the same code I would use for soft tissue mobilization or joint mobilization, and most insurers will reimburse or pay for that. Acupuncture, where they use different codes, again, I think Lori's right. You might want to check with your insurer. But the dry needling should be covered, assuming the therapist is billing under the using the manual therapy codes. And then their notes, the physical therapy notes, should justify the use of that billing code as with any others.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Bob in Appleton, it is your turn. Hi, Bob.
Hi. I don't know if I have tennis elbow. I never had it before, but for 2 weeks after spending several days painting and scraping my garage, my elbow hurts if I lift and if I twist my wrist to turn something. And I don't know if some kind of cuff or a tennis sleeve for that would help, or if I need to do more than that.
Oh, good question. What kind of work do you do? Are you using that arm for work on a daily basis?
No.
Okay, good.
I don't. And it's the arm that I'm left-handed, my right arm. I know it's strictly from doing
okay.
The painting and scraping in my garage.
Okay. Well, that sure makes it a lot easier. There are a couple things that you can do. One is there is a, it's called a tennis elbow strap. And essentially, it creates a new insertion for that muscle, a new origin for the muscle up at the elbow. What's really happening is you have an inflammation of the origin of the muscles that extend your wrist and fingers. So it's usually the gripping and the repetitive wrist flexion and extension that gets this going. So if you put that strap on, it goes just below the elbow, and there's a little pad that goes over the muscle group. That's one thing you can do. A wrist splint helps if you're doing any kind of physical activity because it's actually, as I said earlier, the wrist movement and the wrist activity that is causing the pain at your elbow. So a wrist splint can be useful as well. You can get those at any drugstore. But the real thing that's going to help you get over this is some strengthening exercises of that muscle group. And for this kind of problem, we tend to focus on the negatives or the lowering phase. So what we typically have you do is either use a small grip handheld weight or a resistive band of some sort, and you're sitting with your palm facing down, your forearm supported on the table, and your wrist and hand over the edge of the table, and you passively lift the wrist up or use your other hand to lift it up and then lower it down against the resistance of that resistive band or weight, and usually do that to fatigue. And do, you know, a few sets of that a day. And over time, that, along with some icing several times a day, usually helps you get over that.
Okay, how long might that take before it feels normal again?
That's a tough question to answer. I'd say things that are in your favor are it's not your dominant arm and it's not something you're using on a daily basis for work. So it could be a matter of a couple weeks if all things go well. If you have trouble and it's starting to take longer than that, you should go in and see somebody and get a little bit more direction because it can be hard to get rid of if it hangs around for a long time.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Dan in Partyville. We are on to you. Hi, Dan. Thank you for calling.
Good morning. A couple of years ago, my wife tore a meniscus in her knee, and she had part of it removed. Now she's developed a Baker's cyst behind the knee. Is there anything she can do to alleviate that discomfort and that actual pain?
Well, the first question is, why is the cyst developing? The cyst, and it's typical to have a cyst behind your knee. It's usually a weak spot in your joint capsule. So it's like a balloon on a tire where that pressure causes it to balloon out. So why is there pressure inside our knee that's causing it to balloon out? So it tends to be activity related. If she's getting some swelling in her knee, it'll tend to balloon out the back where that Baker's cyst or that weak spot in the capsule is. So the first thing is looking at whether or not she's getting this swelling in her knee from her activity level, and then that should be addressed. In terms of the cyst itself, usually a pressure sleeve of some sort on the knee will help that. Just a pull-on elastic sleeve may help with that.
She does wear one of those, but that doesn't seem to make any difference.
Doesn't do any good.
Okay. No. Well, then I'd go back to the original, and that is, why is she swelling? And does she have some other pathology in her knee that is causing it to swell? And, you know, one of the things, if she had part of her meniscus removed, is this a sign that the knee is failing, that
well,
it's starting?
She does have arthritis.
Okay.
In the knee.
Okay. So she may need to get in and see somebody to help her with a good exercise program to deal with the arthritis, because when the arthritis gets stirred up, causes a swelling, it's going to push out the Baker's cyst. So going back to the original cause of the problem, it's the arthritis, and that needs to be dealt with.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah,
okay.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. Or go to my Facebook page. You can post there at the Larry Mehler Show. And we have an email from Jan in La Crosse wondering if you folks would talk about hip bursitis. Jan's 50 in otherwise good health and has been having hip and leg pain for the past 6 months or so. Been doing exercises provided by my doctor and taking ibuprofen as needed, still having pain. I was riding an exercise bike several times a week last winter. Wonder if that's what brought on the bursitis. I'd like to resume biking, but don't want to exacerbate the problem.
Well, it could be from the bicycling. Bicycling and running are two classic activities that stir up both bursitis in the hip and iliotibial band syndrome. And that is because the bursa on the outside of your hip sits right over that prominent hip bone. And when you bend and straighten or flex and extend your hip and knee, that band, the iliotibial band, tends to snap back and forth across that bony prominence, catching that bursa. So some things that we tend to do for that, hip and core strengthening, we look at your posture and position on the bike because that can exacerbate it. We talk about some cross training to see if too much biking and if you mix biking with another activity, if that will help decrease some of your symptoms. And then the local treatment, which it sounds like she's been doing, some icing and some ibuprofen, but that's clearly if it's not been sufficient in dealing with the problem, it hasn't been sufficiently addressed. So, yes, yeah. Biking can cause it.
Yep.
Bill?
Yeah, I'm sorry. Lori, go ahead and finish, and I got a couple of thoughts.
Okay. Yeah, so the getting adjusted on her bike is a big thing, and having someone go through with her appropriate biking technique, cadence, resistance, and so on, and then a good core strengthening program.
Yeah, I would agree. After 6 months, if time was going to do it, this should be gone by now. And heading into the coming winter months, wanting to do some biking again, I think I would recommend also that Jan be seen. And if Jan is much of a walker or a jogger, to bring in her walking shoes or running shoes, because it may be something that even down her foot mechanics, ankle mechanics, that set her up to have this occur. The other thing that a therapist would look at is to make sure that this pain isn't coming from her back. A lot of times hip bursitis is perceived on the outside of the hip, and that can be pain coming from the low back area as well. So the therapist could also check the lumbar area as well as the hip.
Mm-hmm. Let's turn, we'll get to Pam in Cambridge in just a moment, but just a reminder that you can join in as we visit with Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody about staying injury-free in fall and winter and how to deal with all those aches and pains that you have right now, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We have many callers online right now with questions, so I am going to turn to Pam in Cambridge for her question. Hi, Pam.
Hi. Hey, I have my mother-in-law who has carpal tunnel as well as cervical issues going on right now.
Yeah.
And I wanted to have an opinion on that, whether she should get a second opinion, because her neurosurgeon diagnosed her as having carpal tunnel in her bilateral hands, and they want to just do surgery versus maybe least invasive issues or options first. And then she doesn't want anything to do with, like, cervical spine
right.
surgery. So,
okay.
Where do we?
All right,
that?
Bill.
CT and a sure. MRI done.
Okay, so Pam, has she seen a physical therapist yet?
No. No
okay.
CT.
All right. And her hands, do you know how involved they are in terms of numbness and weakness?
Yeah, one, like her right hand tremors, and she said they rated it out of 5 out of 0, so I don't, do they do that? Rate them out 3, 5, she mentioned something like that. One has numbness, tingling, pain, and
okay.
Tremoring, so.
Okay. All right, I know they do have a rating system.
Okay.
Well, obviously you're right. Before considering any surgery, you want to make sure that surgery is done at the right site. You can have impingement locally at the wrists, and that's the classic carpal tunnel syndrome. You can also have all the complaints you just described in both hands coming from the neck.
Right.
And obviously, if you have surgery in the wrong place, it just makes everything worse. You know, if the surgeon hasn't told her she needs to have the surgery immediately, I'd recommend seeing a physical therapist.
Okay.
And a therapist that specializes in spine care. Because
okay.
Then they will also check out her wrists and hands and try to get a sense for how much is coming from where. And there are specific treatment programs for somebody with the carpal tunnel syndrome that's related to the neck. So that's I would certainly recommend that before anything more invasive would be attempted.
Okay,
and that makes and that again makes sense because before you go into surgery, you want to make sure you've exhausted all your options. And a physical therapist can take a look at your mother-in-law and say, "Oh yeah, this really looks like pretty classic carpal tunnel," and so on and so forth. And she has a cervical issue, but it seems to be a separate issue that we can address, but it's not the carpal tunnel, et cetera.
Mm.
Can just sort of validate for you and increase her comfort level and going forward.
Right. Yeah, I was a little leery with them just jumping right into surgery, not offering anything else prior to that.
Right. And especially when you have the neck issue, too. It kind of muddies the water.
Correct. And they said that was like just bone on bone. She doesn't have any more cushioning. So can that also create symptoms of carpal tunnel or cause carpal tunnel versus...
You mean in her neck, bone on bone?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Radiating down into both wrists.
Yes.
And numbness throughout her arms and that. So.
Yep, that's correct. And so then at the end of doing surgery at the wrist, then there's going to be scar tissue there, and then that can accentuate the problem up in the neck as well.
Okay.
And so, what you described could cause the symptoms into both of her hands.
Okay. And then they can talk to her about splinting, exercise, steroids, or...
Posture. The therapist would look at your mother-in-law, examine in terms of posture, flexibility, strength. There may be some splints that are necessary for the hands in the early phases,
okay.
But if it's coming from the neck, then that's where changes need to be made.
Mm-hmm.
So the therapist would look at again for stiffness, tightness, and weakness up in the upper back, shoulder, and neck area that would indirectly help what's happening down in her hands.
Okay. Mm. Can that be corrected even if it's her spine is like bone on bone, cervical spine? There's just bone on bone.
It's possible. There's not always a good correlation with what they see on MRI or X-rays where people have bone on bone, yet they have minimal symptoms, a little bit of local stiffness. But it does tell you anatomically it's not normal. But it doesn't mean she's doomed to have this forever. And but the therapist would, you know, with the examination, could give a better prognosis of how much they think they can help based on what they're finding in the examination.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling, Pam. Appreciate your call. Brian in Appleton, we are on to you now. Hi, Brian.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Hey, thanks for taking my concern here. I've had a cervical corpectomy done in October of last year, and after 2 months of wearing the collar and then 1 month of taking it easy, they set me free. And everything felt good, but then about 3 months later, I started getting this symptoms back, and, you know, for the most part, my neck and shoulder. So then they went back in for x-rays, and it turns out that the bottom part did not fuse. Like, I think they called it a failure of the anterior fusion. Anyway, I've been dealing with that. They already told me the surgical option is go through the back, you know, and redo the fusion or stability with the rods and everything. But in the meantime, they want me to try an external bone stimulator. I've never even heard of one before, but is that something that I could expect might help?
Hmm. What do you think, Bill?
Yeah, it's possible. The external bone stimulator has been around for a long time, and there is some evidence that it can help promote a more solid bony union. The other thing that would be really important for you is, again, if you haven't worked with a physical therapist to work with one, you need really good upper back and shoulder flexibility and strength. I mean, your symptoms are coming from your neck. That's the assumption. But if there's stiffness in that upper back and shoulder area, then there's a lot more pressure on the surgical site than there needs to be or should be. And they should be able to work you pretty aggressively in the thoracic area, in the shoulder area, and not compromise what they're trying to promote in the neck region. So if you haven't seen a therapist to do that, I would recommend doing that in conjunction with the bone stimulator and anything else that they are doing or suggesting with your neck.
Yeah. I'm actually going to University Hospital tomorrow. The doctor's there and for like a second opinion. But so anyway, I just didn't want to too aggressive with the therapy, and then any bone that's trying to graft or fuse there, I just would be, you know, knocking it loose again or whatever.
Yeah.
Now, the therapy could be done safely, but it's like getting a second opinion is good from two perspectives. Either just if you can have another surgery, but also what's their prognosis for the current fusion taking better over the next few months yet. So the second opinion should help you with both of those. But regardless of what they're going to do, you know, having somebody work with your upper back and shoulder area and some postural things would be really important for you.
There you go. Yeah. Good luck. Thank you.
Good luck, Brian.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. We got an email from John who has a stiff neck and shoulders, had it for some time, which has even led to some equilibrium problems once in a while. Doesn't know if he should go to my doctor, the chiropractor, or the massage therapist. Any advice?
How about adding a physical therapist to that list?
Yeah, I was going
to
say that. Could help.
Well, you know, the question is why he has a stiff neck and shoulders. If there was some injury, if he has a work, his occupation is such that it puts a lot of stress on his neck and shoulders, if he's in a bad posture for most of the day. You know, it could easily be the opposite of that, in that he's sitting at a desk all day in bad posture. Even though he's not physically putting a load on them, he is loading it, and it gets stiff from being in one position for a long period of time. So the real question I have is, why do you have this stiffness? There are certain pathologies that can cause stiffness in that area, and you would want to rule those out. But without any more information, you know, yeah. The safest route would be to say you need to start with your doctor to rule out any pathology. And thereafter, you know, a physical therapist could instruct you in the issues related to posture, if it's posture related, into stretching and mobility activities, as well as, you know, after a visit or two, helping guide you into an ongoing regular exercise program that can sustain that, you know, whether it's yoga or some other class.
Yeah, I think and also what concerns me a little bit, so I think John mentioned equilibrium problems.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. which can mean a lot, lots of things. If it's a matter of legs feeling weak or heavy, or if it's more dizziness, that would be concerning to me as well. And so if you see the medical doctor, you know, he needs to describe what he's feeling in his neck and shoulders, but to be give more detail in terms of what is this equilibrium problem, what is it really?
Let's turn to Brian in Brookfield next. Hi, Brian.
Hi, guys. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Sure.
I am a construction worker slash skilled trades worker for the last 25 years or so. So I have gotten used to the aches and pains that go along with the trades. However, recently I've been starting to experience a sharp debilitating pain within my hips, and it varies from one side to the other. Main reason for my phone call today is because of the way the economy is. I am now without insurance and a doctor, and obviously surgery and aggressive treatment is out of the question right now. So my question is, what kind of things can I be doing in the morning to possibly help out what's going on? I mean, I'm guessing that things are worn out down there. I probably need hardware. The whole deal. I'm wondering what I can do, being a father and supporting a family, what I can do to keep in action and put this off as long as possible.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Lori, we start with you and then maybe go to Bill.
Brian, how old are you, may I ask?
I just turned 42.
Okay.
All right.
You're awfully young to have sharp pains in your hips and to have worn out your hips. The short answer to your question is, what can you do in the morning? Do you have more pain in the morning, first thing in the morning, or is it better first thing in the morning?
I think I'm better in the morning. I tend to have it after a long drive home and getting out of the truck kind of thing.
Okay.
So after sitting. And then the pain comes.
Okay. Through. And then if you get up and move around, does it get better or does it get worse as you get moving?
It tends to get worse at first. It gets bad enough that I have to either lay down or drop to my knees, and then it tends to subside. It's a day by day kind of thing. If it hits me bad, I'll have about 3 days of this.
Okay.
And suddenly go away. But I'm being very careful about noticing what the triggers could possibly be here,
mm-hmm.
and I can't figure out anything in particular that I'm doing differently. I mean, I'm a carpenter, I'm a mechanic, I'm a plumber. I do all of those kind of things, and I can't figure out one typical thing that I do that seems to be bothering it.
Okay, and where in your hips? Is it in the back? Is it on the outside? Is it in the groin?
It's as if somebody took an arrow and went right into the front of my thigh and deep inside. It's a very small, targeted, pointed area. And I mean, just from images I've seen on TV and online, it seems to be in the ball of my hip.
In the ball of your hip. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, there's a number of things that can be going on there. You know, it could be referred from your back. It could be local in your hip. It could be some arthritis. It could be some hip impingement. There's an impingement syndrome you get in your hip, and given your history of physical labor, you could have something called femoral acetabular impingement syndrome that's now kind of rearing its head. It's a little bit like a hip version of a meniscal tear.
Okay, which I'm familiar with. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's one of the other injuries.
Right. So, you know, I'd say to start with, you know, some stretching, some mobility, keeping your hips loose, obviously avoiding the things that bother it, like the long drives, and then doing some core strengthening for your hips, for your low back.
See, that was my biggest question. I'm all about a strengthening approach, but my question with the strengthening thing is, how do I work at strengthening this without possibly hurting it worse? I'm on the phone. I know you can
right.
only get some
right.
information
right.
here, so I'm trying to narrow it down as much as I can in the little time we have.
Right. Well, but, you know, for the time and money invested, one or two visits to a physical therapist, they could look at your hips, they could look at your back, and they could set you up on some exercises and give you some guidance. So, you know, they should be able to help sort this out. They may not definitively be able to say it's this or that, but should be able to tell enough to give you some strengthening exercises that would be safe for you to do.
Hmm.
Sure, put me in some kind of direction.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, Brian, I would agree with Lori. It could be a combination of your hips and your back, both, but because of that, seeing somebody once or twice, and you know, if you're willing to leave some contact information, you know, I can help try to find a physical therapy clinic that offers pro bono services, where they would maybe see you once or twice for no charge or minimal charge.
Oh my God, that'd be fabulous! So there's not enough bartering going on. In
well,
regardless, any non-traditional direction towards healthcare would be huge for me at this point.
Yeah.
Tell you what, we'll put you on hold, Brian, and Judith will get your information, and then Bill will get back to you.
Outstanding. This is a great service. Keep it up. I love the show. Thank you very much.
Thanks,
Brian.
Thanks, Brian. And got him kind of on hold, and we'll go to, from Brian, we will go to Ryan. let's see what's on Ryan's mind. Hi, Ryan.
Hi. I have kind of concerns of an old injury from July of 2010 that's kind of seemingly to rear its ugly head again. I had a high ankle sprain, kind of falling off the back of a truck. I was stepping in, and I stepped backwards down and kind of folded my ankle on both sides. And now as the kind of cooler weather has come on, it seems to be aching and all this other kinds of things more and more. Is this something I need to get seen again, or is it just kind of one of these?
Well, let's back up. When you say high ankle sprain, what do you mean?
Well, I'm not exactly sure. When it first happened, there was such severe bruising on both sides of my ankle that they thought I had broken it, but they said that I would have been lucky to break it.
Right.
Because this was worse, and there was a little bit on that. So that's kind of what I recall out of that painful moment.
Okay, so you sprained on both sides, the inside and the outside of your ankle. You sprained ligaments on both sides.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Okay, and does it feel unstable now?
It's definitely, I don't want to say unstable, but it's definitely not as strong as it once was.
Okay, and what kind of imaging did you have done at the time? You had plain x-rays, one, two, three?
Yeah, there was multiple x-rays.
Okay. Were they weight-bearing x-rays? Were you standing on it when you had your x-rays? Do you remember?
No. They did it with a bunch of different kind of triangular pillows and whatnot.
Okay. So you were non-weight-bearing.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, I couldn't. A couple months, I couldn't even do anything with it.
Okay. Well, there's a couple things. We sprain the ligaments on the outside and the inside. Those tend to heal pretty well. If you sprain the ligaments in the front, the ones that basically hold the two ankle bones together, and I'm wondering if that's what they meant by high ankle sprain, it can create instability in your ankle. So that's why the weight-bearing film. If you have a weight-bearing film, you can see that the spread or the instability between those two bones. If you have non-weight-bearing films, they can't really assess the quality of that. So there are a number of things that can go wrong. As you can have chronic instability with that. You can develop fairly significant degenerative joint disease in your ankle because of that. You can also, with that kind of sprain where you have both sides, you can get what's called an osteochondral lesion, which will give you arthritic type symptoms, which is aching when the weather turns cold.
Yeah.
So I guess that's the long way to get to. You really should be seen again.
Okay.
And I'd have just a more thorough examination of your ankle, checking for that tibiofibular instability, some mortise instability, and potentially looking like with a CT at the status of your joint surfaces, your Taylor dome.
Okay. There so it go. Is something that should be looked at again.
Yeah, I think so.
Yep. Good luck. Thank you for calling. We have an email from Kay, who's having problems with arthritis in her neck and shoulders. Any exercises you can recommend for people with arthritis in their neck and shoulders? Bill, do you want to take that one?
Sure, you bet. Yeah, arthritis, it's not rare in the neck. And it's the same principles we would apply in the low back or at the knee. Is you want to maintain as good a flexibility in the neck and shoulders as possible. But as I mentioned with the previous caller, it's also really important that the mid-back and upper back are as flexible as possible. I have people using foam rollers or exercise balls to stretch over. You're trying to stretch between your shoulder blades and through the rib cage. It's difficult to do without something to provide a fulcrum for you. So postural exercises are really important. And then core strengthening, especially if Kay is using arms much for daily activities at home or at work. Again, the more core strength you have, then the better posture you can maintain in your neck as you're doing those kinds of activities. So gentle stretching in different directions through the neck and shoulders themselves, fairly aggressive upper mid-back stretching program, again, using rolled-up towels or if she has access to a foam roller or an exercise ball, and then some core strengthening on top of that.
Okay, there we go. Let's go to Rory in Rolling Stone, Minnesota. Hi, Rory.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Well, my wife has a problem in her lower back, sciatic nerve going down through the buttock. And then at night, her legs will cramp up enough to the point where it takes, like, heat to get them to on-cramp. And she's also a bus driver. So she's sitting for a good 8 to 10 hours a day with some movement, but not a lot of movement.
Bill,
yeah. Sure. Roy, how long has your wife been having these difficulties?
Since about in June. We've been to chiropractor, doctored, physical therapy. Nothing is really helping.
Okay. And does she have any numbness or tingling or weakness below the knee in particular, do you know?
No.
Okay. All right. Well, as much driving as she does, it's just like driving trucks. It's not just the sitting, but the vibration that goes with it that puts a lot of stress on that low back area and the discs in particular. Do you know if she uses any kind of a lumbar support or back support while she's driving?
Yes.
Okay. And then making sure that she has the seat as close to the steering wheel as she can comfortably. Because
right.
If she's sitting back a ways, when she straightens out that leg, it stretches the sciatic nerve every time she uses you would use the clutch or even reaching for the gas pedal.
It's the right leg.
Yeah, of course, that's usually the one.
Yeah,
she needs to really try to avoid straightening that leg out as much as she can while she's driving, because that will help irritate things. And also, if she's closer to the steering wheel, that will allow that support to provide her better lumbar support and, again, help keep some pressure off the nerves. There's times where an injection is needed to quiet down the sciatic nerve. And I don't know, for now 5 months, something's not getting better. Has anybody discussed an injection for the sciatica?
Doesn't help.
So she's had it and it doesn't help.
Okay. All right.
Boy.
All right.
We're scheduling an MRI for this next week, right after Thanksgiving.
Okay. All right. Well, most likely, that may identify where the nerve is being irritated or compressed. And then they may start talking to her either about a different kind of injection or maybe surgery. But, again, you've got to get that nerve quieted down. And so anything that she can modify a little further for her, the sitting in that bus, considering how many hours a day she's in there, is going to be critical no matter what is done to her back.
Make a difference on the seat height.
Yes, it can. If it's up too high, then she has to really reach with that right foot to reach the gas pedal and brake and things. And again, that puts more of a stretch on the sciatic nerve.
Okay.
All right. So things to think about. Good luck, Rory. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. We're talking about dealing with aches and pains today with Bill Boisenault and Laurie Tyne Brody, UW physical therapist. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have an ache, a pain, a sprain, or a strain that you want to talk about today on the show, I hope you'll join in as we visit with Bill Boies and Alton Lurie Tyne Brody. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Go to our Facebook page, too. You can post there at The Larry Mueller Show. Cheryl and Prentice, we are turning to you now. Hi, Cheryl.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I'm 60 years old and in good health. I've noticed over the past few years that my shoulders have become slumped, and I'm apparently becoming more lazy about my posture. Is there any type of a shoulder brace I could use to correct this?
Oh, good question. There are braces you can use, but, you know, the real Clydesdale of this is strengthening those muscles in your back. The brace can help serve as a reminder for you to stand up straight, but really it's your muscles and your cognitive awareness of your posture that are going to be the mainstay of keeping you better. So there are braces that are called a figure of eight brace, and they help hold your shoulders back some. But again, they only go part of the way. The real trick is going to be getting on a good strengthening program to use the muscles that hold your shoulder blades back, hold your shoulder blades down, tuck your chin in, and hold yourself up nice and tall. At the same time, we need to do stretching on the front side of your shoulder, because sometimes with that progressive slumped posture, you get tightness on the front side, and it makes it very hard for the muscles in the back to hold your shoulders in the right posture because they're fighting against tightness in the front. So a physical therapist would give you some specific stretching exercises to deal with the tissues in front that are soft and the tissues in back that are weak. The brace can serve as a supplement, but it is not going to be what gets you better.
Hmm.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks very much for calling. And Lori in Oshkosh, it is your turn. Hi, Lori.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
I have had this chronic issue between my shoulder blades and my, I guess, traps, where I get a lot of stiffness and soreness, especially after using the elliptical or even walking on the treadmill, and it seems to be much more pronounced as the cold weather approaches. And I just wonder if there's something in that elliptical, the ones with the handles, that is aggravating that, or is it because I'm just not consistent enough with it?
Hmm.
Well, it's... The elliptical, it's possible. The resistance may just be set too high, too intense, and the muscles are fatiguing there. That interscapular area between the shoulder blades, so it could be local, a local muscle problem, or it could, some of the stiffness could be coming from your neck. What may help is doing some upper back and mid-back stretching before and after you do the elliptical. And I don't know if you have access to a foam roller or an exercise ball that you can stretch over, you know, thinking of stretching backward or from side to side. And that may help some. Also strengthening that upper back area, as Lori just described on a recent caller, in conjunction with the elliptical training. But again, I don't know how intense the resistance is that you're setting for the arm work, but maybe back off on that a bit too. May help you actually spend more time on the elliptical with less of the stiffness.
Yes, I don't put any resistance on because I'm, trying not to aggravate it. But I did for a period of time try some of the upper back machines, you know, the weight machines at, you know, maybe just as slight as like 10 pounds to try to strengthen that area. And I get discouraged very easily because that pain comes back. So maybe it is more, like you say, a matter of getting the right stretches.
Yeah, maybe stretches in conjunction. And again, some of this may be coming from your neck. So just trying to be very aware of your posture when you're exercising, doing the strengthening, as well as when you're on the elliptical. You know, try to maintain kind of good straight alignment. Don't let that chin drop forward, especially as you get further into the activity. But yeah, the strengthening is still, it's a good idea, but some stretching along with it. You know, another thing that I have people use that's helpful for that area is using a tennis ball, because it's hard to localize a stretch to that area. So you can lie on the floor on your back with your knees bent and put the tennis ball underneath that area of your back and then roll on it. And you'll find spots that hurt good. Is a way to work some of those knots out and also help to increase flexibility in that area.
Oh, great. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a really good idea, because sometimes when you're in that mid-back area and you try a global stretch, you stretch all the areas around the spot that's really tight, but you can't quite get at the spot that's tight. So you're doing all this stretching, and you're not really getting at the spot where the problem is.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you so much, Lori, for calling. And we go to another Lori, this time in Buffalo, Minnesota. Hi, Lori.
Yeah. Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I've been told that I have an anterior labral tear and a cam impingement, and I've heard kind of some discussion about you guys talking a little bit about that today.
Mm-hmm.
And my orthopedic surgeons pretty much focused me on core stability training, like Pilates type things.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering if walking aggravates it, and in the wintertime, I typically use an elliptical, and if that can aggravate it also.
Well, with a cam-type impingement, walking should be okay as long as you're using good posture. And the elliptical should be okay as long as you keep your step height small. You know, don't let your hip come way up into a lot of flexion, because that's when you're going to get the impingement. What's that? Excuse me?
Yeah. Don't, like, lean down into it.
Right, don't lean down into it. Don't let your hip come up into a lot of flexion, because that's when you're going to impinge. And typically, you'll get pretty instant feedback if you're impinging.
Okay.
So, yeah, so stay in a smaller range with a little bit less resistance. Do isolated strengthening of your hip in ranges that that don't compromise that tear.
Have you heard of yoga being a problem?
Well, you know, there's so many different types of yoga that I don't think you can say globally yoga is or yoga isn't. Probably some yoga things are and some yoga things aren't.
Okay, I'm going to do some research on that, because I really enjoy yoga, but there's some things that you really get crunched, and I think, oh, that really hurts, some of that, and that's the message I...
Well,
yeah.
Right, right, exactly. But there may be ways to modify what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
Lori, there's no reason you can't try and try to do yoga. But just like you described, the kind of pain you don't want to work through is any kind of pinching, anything that's sharp, especially in the front of that hip. You want to avoid that sensation, no matter what poses or routine you're doing.
Yeah.
Okay.
There you go. Thanks, Lori. And Dick in Chippewa Falls has a related thing here, I believe. Dick, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi there. Yoga. I don't have a gym membership anymore. And the weight training I used to do in the gym, I'm trying to replace it with something at home that I can do. And I've been thinking of turning to yoga for strength exercises. What do you think about that? Can I get it done with yoga, or what else can I do at home to keep up the strength?
Well, you certainly can get some strengthening with yoga. It's best known for its mobility, but you can get some strengthening. It will strengthen you to a certain point, and it tends to strengthen you relatively isometrically, and that is you get in a pose and you hold it in that position. So you have strength in that position, not necessarily carry over into other positions or postures. So it would be useful to supplement that with some other kind of strengthening program. There are a number of videos out there that are good with light weights and things, some core strengthening programs where you work the glutes and the abs, again, with some light weights. I think any of those would be good. As long as they're done, using good postures and good mechanics and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And those are things I can do at home?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. A plethora of videos out there.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Dave in Madison, on to you. Hi.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
Well, I was diagnosed with trigeminal neuralgia about 3 years ago. I've been through numerous surgeries. The pain does not go away. I'm on so many medications right now that my general health is just terrible. I think that it's due because of all the medication I'm on. But without the medication, it feels like somebody is sticking a pen in my eye or a nail in my eye and just swirling it around. And it affects the whole left side of my face in the same manner.
Oh, boy. And, Bill, we have about a minute for you to respond here for now.
Okay. Yeah, the trigeminal nerve is one of the facial nerves, and it provides sensation around the eye and around the mouth, and also it's muscles that we chew with. And a neuralgia, it's a nerve type of pain that can be very, very debilitating. Once in a while, some soft tissue mobilization, cranial sacral therapy, considering all the things that sound like, Dave, that you've tried, can help, you know, take the edge off the pain and start getting you off some of the pain medications that, again, that may be helpful. But it's the nerve pain, it can be excruciating.
I wish we had more time to talk about. Maybe we'll talk. We'll take a quick break and we'll come back. And I know Lori's got some comments as well. And we'll be back right after this quick look at the news. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. Yard and housework as well as sports are great for both body and soul, but without attention to safety, they can lead to aches and pains or a whole lot worse. And when we try to pack many of these activities into just a couple of weekend days, there's a big risk of overusing muscles. Larry Mueller here. Glad to have you join us on the Ideas Network. Talking today about how to avoid injuries and how to recover from them if they happen anyway. And my guests are physical therapists Lori Tyne Brody and Bill Boisenault. And they're here until 12:30 today to answer your questions when you call us. And the number is 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org. And be sure to visit our Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show. And if you like the page, you'll get daily updates on upcoming show topics. We will be back with our guests right after this look at the news. Stay with us. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here visiting today with Bill Boisenault and Lori Tyne Brody, UW physical therapist. Great to have both of them with us, and thank you so much for listening in. Give us a call at 800-642-1234 with your questions, or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post there. And we have Dave from Madison with trigeminal neuralgia. And I know that you wanted to make a comment on it.
This is a terrible, terrible kind of pain to have. And I presume that he's been pretty much through everything, but I just wanted to make sure that he had checked in with a facial therapist. There are people who specialize in facial pain from a therapy perspective, right? Or, you know, then you get to the point where you say, okay, the pain is there, and then you go to a pain clinic, and then you deal with them and learn strategies for actually dealing with the pain, but not necessarily presuming that it's going to go away in the short term.
Right.
So,
right. They tell you to think of a kinder spot, think of a happy place, and go there and try and think yourself through the pain. And, you know, trigeminal neuralgia is a pain that you can't touch because it's inside your brain is where it starts. With me, it's in the cerebellum where an artery has wrapped itself around the trigeminal nerve. And every time my heart beat, it constricts the trigeminal nerve, which causes the left side of my face to signal pain when there's absolutely no reason for pain to be there, but it is.
Yeah.
And that's how it generates with me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so everybody's pretty much throwing their hands up in the air, and they're just throwing drugs at me. Mm-hmm. And I don't like living life where I depend on a handful of drugs in the morning, another handful at noon, another handful in the evening, and another handful before I go to bed to keep the pain or maintain so that I can live. I still have pain all day, every day, but it's low enough so that I can at least tolerate it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, without medication, I couldn't do anything. I wouldn't be able to get out of bed. I wouldn't be able to you can't even walk. It's amazing how much the nerves in your face affect your your whole life. And you, when you walk, just the simple movement of your body walking, it signals pain. And it's just, it's weird. It's the weirdest thing I've ever had or ever heard of.
A caller just called in to say that acupuncture helped her trigeminal neuralgia. And who knows how her trigeminal neuralgia is the same as or different from yours, but it helped her. So you may want to at least explore that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, when you get to the point that Dave's at, you really try everything.
I've had two operations.
Yeah,
I've been exposed to Yakov-Creutzfeldt disease. I don't even know if they gave that to me or not, but it takes 7 or 8 years for that to incubate in your body. But they operated on me after somebody with Creutzfeldt-Yakov disease at the University Hospital in Madison, and they didn't know that this person had that particular disease. They operated on me and 23 other people, and then they found out that this person had a disease of this magnitude, and then they notified us, said, well, you know, rest assured that if you do, in fact, contract this disease, we'll make you as comfortable as possible. Because it kills you. There's no cure.
Yeah.
Well, Dave, thanks for calling, and I'm sorry I can't offer anything beyond that.
And you should check. Some HMOs and insurance companies do cover acupuncture, so it's worth certainly checking with your insurance company or your HMO on that. Good luck.
Thank you.
Julie in Milwaukee, we are on to you now. Hi, Julie. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thank you for taking this. My mom has very severe sciatica, scoliosis, you name it. Her pain management guy is terrific, but now she's at the point where they've suggested radio frequency ablation. And I work in the medical device industry, so my mother thinks I know everything. And I can tell you about a heart monitor, but I do not know exactly what radio frequency ablation is.
Bill, do you?
Yes, I do. I do. It's designed to basically cut through nerves in certain areas of the spine to give you pain relief. So they can do temporary nerve blocks. And it's usually the sequence. If they do a temporary nerve block and that gives your mom good relief, then you can make a stronger case. If everything else has failed, the radio frequency nerve ablation. So that's what it is. You're cutting through nerves, and if you cut the nerves, then you don't have the nerve endings, the pain endings attached anymore to the spinal cord. So
how invasive is this?
Well, it's not invasive like a surgery at all. It's not like having a lumbar fusion or lumbar decompression. Some of these nerves go to muscles in the spine, some of the small muscles, and so people have this. It's important that once they recover from the procedure itself, that they're on a good core strengthening program. To help compensate for what the small muscles aren't able to do anymore.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. And how incapacitated is she likely to be?
Minimally.
The day of the procedure, I meant.
Yeah. Well, she'll have some soreness after the lidocaine like anesthesia wears off. They'll do local anesthesia. And once it wears off, she'll be sore, but it sounds like she's been in a lot of pain to begin with, and so the soreness should be local where the ablation took place.
Okay, there you go. Good luck. Thanks.
But before they do it, and assuming they probably have, they should try temporary nerve blocks first. So you can do this on a temporary basis and see what kind of relief she gets before they do this more permanent procedure.
Oh, okay, makes sense for sure. Julie, thank you for calling. Appreciate it. We have an email from Harry in St. Germain last spring on a referral from a sports doctor. I underwent physical therapy for an Achilles injury. The eccentric therapy eventually cured the problem, but since I did the eccentric exercises on the other leg too, I actually induced a similar injury on the other side. Mm-hmm. And that injury's been harder to overcome. I like to jog about 3.5 miles a week, three times a week. But the Achilles injuries have often interrupted that schedule. Just turned 68, but the jogging has helped, I think, keep me very healthy. My questions are, may I jog while still trying to overcome the second Achilles injury, or should I really rest that area? Should I do the eccentric exercises only from the floor rather than from a stair step to avoid overstretching?
Oh, such good questions. Yes, the induced injury from doing it on the other side. I'd say that since he's saying that he's having difficulty getting over the second one, you know, the jogging does tend to be problematic. If you stay on a flat, it's not so bad. If you're running hills, it's worse. So, you know, if you're really feeling like the jogging helps to some extent and it's important to you to keep you healthy, you can try to run through it. I'd just say try to stay on a flat and avoid the hills. And then, yeah, certainly try them from the level surface, doing just the lowering, and see if you can get some traction that way, if you can start to make some progress, and then gradually increase the range of motion to where you do it over the edge of the step. The other thing you can try as an in-between rather than moving from the flat to the stair is to try adding weight first, and that is people put a backpack on with some weights in the back to add resistance before you add range, and that may work better for you. You can give it a try.
All right, there we go. And from Lisa, my husband hyperextended his big toe on his left foot 2 years ago. The family doc told him to take ibuprofen 2 at twice a day. He did this. The swelling went down, but the pain and stiffness remain. Doesn't like to take that much of any kind of drug and stopped after 3 weeks. Should he stay on this program, go back to the doc, or is there another option? He's 48, on his feet and on the move 12 to 14 hours a day as he is extremely active.
2 years ago, and he's still having pain. He needs to, if he hasn't been in to see a physical therapist, I think that'd be a great idea. The question is, what happened when he hyperextended his toe? Did he damage his joint surfaces, and is that why he's still having pain? Has it changed the mechanics of his foot, of how his foot moves? He could use an orthotic potentially to balance out some of the loads in his foot. I could talk about footwear, about how he moves when he's at work. I wouldn't go back to the ibuprofen and such at this point in time, but there are some things that a physical therapist can do by looking at his posture, looking at how he moves, looking at how he works, and his shoe wear to see where we can give him some assistance. Because that joint, that first joint of your big toe is very important for balance and for any kind of movement. And if it wears out, you know, he's pretty young to have it wear out already. It can give you a tremendous amount of pain.
Bruce in Algoma, on to you now. Hi, Bruce.
Good afternoon. I'm dealing with trochanter bursitis, which I had an episode some years ago, quickly relieved with steroid injections. At this point, I'm dealing with it for now over 30 days, and it is annoying. I mean, it interferes with sleep, and I've had 2 injections, hasn't helped, doing some physical therapy, but it's now to the point where it's not just in the hip, it's affecting the thigh on that side. And I'm trying to figure out what your folks there can tell me in terms of, if I get over this, when I get over this, how do I prevent this from happening again? I'm active, but I'm not jogging. I mean, I've been told that walking can cause this to happen.
Well, that's true. Walking can cause this, any kind of activity where you are repeatedly flexing and extending your hip can bring this on. You know, you can get it stirred up by sleeping on your side at night for an extended period of time. It can get cause the bursa to swell, and then once it's swollen and irritated, then sometimes your normal daily activities can perpetuate it. Typically, the injection beats that bursitis back down and keeps it from coming back. Now, the question is, why is it coming back? And so as a physical therapist, we would tend to look at your hip mobility, your lumbar spine mobility, mobility, your lower extremity posture from basically from the waist on down, to see if there's something about the way you're standing, moving, etc., that's putting excessive pressure on that trochanteric bursitis, or on the bursa. And then we treat the bursitis like any other inflammation. But yeah, the question is, why did it come back? Do you have any idea what brought it back in the last 30 days?
Not really. You know, I've lost weight, you know, fortunately. I'm not, you know, I went from 220 down to 200 pounds or a little less, so that was kind of nice.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been doing a little bit more. I bicycled more this summer than I ever have before, but I've got a recumbent. I've got a recumbent bike, which I think is really orthopedic or posturally, you know, preferred. And I go swimming, but I'm not jogging, and I'm not skiing, and I'm not, you know, doing any stress issues there. So that's the part that's maddening.
Well, I think any number of those things could have perpetuated it. And the recumbent bike is a great bike, but it does put a little more traction on your hip and some of those soft tissues. And so, you know, the core strengthening, working on your hip, glute strengthening would be in your best interest.
Mm-hmm.
So bumping up your activity to produce the weight loss was a good thing, but the increase in activity may have stirred this up as well.
Yep.
Okay, thank you for your help. I guess we're all on the same page.
Yes.
All right, thanks, Bruce. And Steve, hello to you.
Hello.
What's on your mind?
I have a failed fusion, L4, L5. I would assume it's failed because the doctors are keeping me on pain meds. They won't let me go back to work. It's I've tried everything. I've done facet injections, physical therapy, everything you can think of, I've done it, and there's no relief other than pain medication. And I really don't like medication for, you know, I don't want to live on medication. I'd love to find someone that may be able to fix this or...
Okay.
Yeah,
Bill?
Social Security disability and whatever else.
Yeah. Bill?
Well, it's a really tough spot to be in. And when you're in this much pain, it's difficult to exercise at a level that can be of benefit to your back in terms of strengthening and flexibility. Steve, do you have access to a swimming pool anywhere?
No, sir. Not, okay. Well, yeah, but I have to drive quite a ways, and then driving's okay. Not a real good thing.
Right. I'm sure that doesn't help your back.
Mm.
You know, it's either the pool, because the buoyancy unweights your back. It allows you to do a lot more strengthening and a lot more hip flexibility with less stress on that area. The other thing to maybe check into, and maybe the physical therapist has tried this with you, but there's unweighting apparatuses where basically you get some traction while you're standing, and you can be on a bike or on a treadmill where you can at least start getting some aerobic work in, some aerobic exercise. So if no one has tried an unweighting system with you, I would call a local therapy department or clinic and see if somebody has such a system that maybe can just kind of get the ball rolling in the right direction for you and open some other doors for you from a rehabilitation perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Go to the Veterans Hospital or clinic for that, and they have everything there. So.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, that's good. If they haven't tried an unweighting system with you, then that to me, that'd be worth trying.
Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. We have a follow-up to the call about the bus driver. Jim in Jackson County said the caller with the bus driver wife resonated with me, sounded similar to my own experiences. After 2 years of dealing with pain, I tried a gluten-free diet and had significant improvement.
Yeah, that's we've heard that more and more often of different musculoskeletal problems that are perpetuated by diet. So gluten, the fatty acids, the excessive carbohydrates, the dairy, the amount of dairy in the diet, all those things have been shown to, in some studies, to contribute to chronic inflammation in the body, and that can perpetuate a sciatica. So when you're at your wit's end, People try a lot of different things, and for some people, some of these things are successful.
And a caller in Rhinelander often gets Charlie horses during the night, especially after she's done strenuous exercises. What can we do to prevent those Charlie horses? And that's something I think a lot of people get.
Yeah, well, it depends upon what's causing the Charlie horse. So, you know, the low-hanging fruit we think about are things like dehydration, not enough fluids, especially if you're exercising, lack of potassium causing muscle spasms. You know, the other thing that causes cramping in your legs at night is spinal stenosis. So, you know, we have to think about ruling that out as a possibility as well. Typically, when you sit up and dangle your legs over the edge of the bed, if the cramps go away, then you know, that's a positive sign for stenosis, and then we deal with that.
An email from Bob in Minocqua in mid-August. Lori, you suggested he should do heavy load eccentric loading to treat his heel tendonitis. And he said, I've been making slow progress and I'm about 90 to 95% pain-free. That's a good thing.
That's excellent.
Yeah. Should I continue doing this exercise when I am pain-free? What's the maximum body weight load I should add to my backpack?
Oh, boy, that's a really good question. And I would say it depends upon what kind of activity he's going back to. So if he's going back to heavy loading activities, for example, if he's a runner and he's landing with 2 to 3 times his body weight with every step, then you can keep adding more and more weight until you're pain-free, basically. I'd keep doing it as a maintenance program, probably with less frequency and less intensity than you're doing now, but just back it off to an ongoing maintenance program, especially if you are working to try to remain active in a pretty physical, either recreational activity or vocation.
Dave in Blanchardville, on to you. Hi, Dave.
Yes, hello. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
I have a simple problem, I think. I have an injured elbow. Last summer, while harvesting some firewood, I picked up a large, heavy section of log and threw it downhill toward the trailer and so forth. And I knew at the time I had hurt my right elbow, and it still is paining. I can't really pick up heavy objects with that arm. I try to baby it, of course, and I wonder, is there any obvious therapy I should be thinking about?
Well, if it's been going on since, what do you say, August? Was it last summer?
Oh, yeah.
You need to have that looked at. You could have sprained some of the ligaments on the inside of your elbow, and those are really important for any kind of upper extremity function. So, you know, before we go recommending some exercises to help with that, I think you need to have it ruled out. For people who, you know, show up and say, my elbow got sore after I did a whole bunch of repetitive lifting, can kind of say it's probably a tendinopathy. But when you have an acute injury like that with one throw, there's other things that can happen that you should get evaluated before we proceed with a kind of conservative treatment. Mm-hmm. So I'd get that checked out. As long as it's been going on, you're still having symptoms, you need to get that checked out.
Good luck. Thank you for calling. And Steve in Wausau, do you have a quick question?
Yeah, I'm diagnosed with cervical degenerative disc disease, C4 and 7. And the doctor recommended when you go golfing, take the ibuprofen a couple, maybe hours before and that. And I like, everybody says they don't like to take ibuprofen if you don't have to. And I found a friend that his doctor gives him a salve, and he puts it directly on the neck, and it goes right to the area where the pain persists. And is there one method better than the other, or do you need to watch what you put on your neck? Are there some pretty good medications like Aspergream? That seems to give me relief.
Hmm. Bill, you got about 30 seconds or so.
Okay, as long as you don't have any kind of allergies, and you'll know with a skin reaction whether it's going to cause problems or not. So I think, you know, just clear with your physician, they can help you there. But see, especially with golfing, you want really good mid-back and upper-back flexibility. So using the tennis ball that we described before, using a foam roller to really stretch out that rib cage and middle back and shoulder area should take some pressure off your neck and also hopefully help your golf game too.
There you go. Thank you very much for calling in, Bill. Lori, thank you so much.
Thank you. Great questions.
Yeah great questions.
And, as always.
And great suggestions from the callers as well.
Yeah, and you'll be back on December 19th.
Excellent.
Look forward to it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. I'm Bill Boisenault, Associate Professor at the UW School of Medicine and Public Health. Lori Tynebrody, Physical Therapist at the UW Sports Medicine Center. They'll be back on the 19th of December. Stay with us.